Hi, I'm Paul Yuknovich. I'm one of the lead program managers for Visual Studio, and I'm really excited to be here today as a part of the Visual Studio 10 launch to be telling you all about Windows development. And this is a topic that's really near and dear to my heart, both as a user of Windows development since about the Visual Basic 3 days, all the way through my career at Microsoft when I worked on every version of Visual Studio, worked on WinForms, worked on WPF data binding, Silverlight data binding, Windows, and Office. So I'm really excited to be talking to you today about this topic. All right, so let's talk about Windows development a little bit. One thing we're seeing in the industry is a trend towards having much richer applications in everyday situations. So we see applications now that actually use the graphics card, that use 3D capabilities, that have a little bit of bump when they're running. And additionally, we're seeing that, you know, even in our line of business applications, it's common to have these kinds of features. Another thing that's going on in the industry is we had the release of Windows 7. And that's been one of the best critically acclaimed releases of Windows that we've had in years, you know, possibly since Windows 95. So I think that's also bringing back some momentum to see some of the really cool things that we can do on the Windows desktop. You know, to mention a few, you can do have a better task manager experience and better windowing. You have the jump list. You have the really cool ability to snap windows from side to side. So those are the kinds of things today that everyday applications are doing. And what I want to do in this talk is show you some of the ways that today you'll be able to use VS 10, Visual Studio 2010, to add those capabilities to your application. It's actually very easy. Another trend that we're seeing is a movement to web applications, right? You know, and there's a lot of reasons for that. There's the breadth of reach that you can have with web applications, and you know, the perception of easier deployment. Well, a great thing is you might also be aware of Silverlight, which is a Microsoft platform that gives you the deployment advantages of the web, but also gives you a lot more richness, right? And sometimes we call these applications rich internet applications, or RIA for short. So the great thing is, with Silverlight, we're also seeing a lot of momentum. You're seeing really rich media-based applications that are out there. For example, we're seeing Netflix.com, which has online streaming of your home videos. We saw the NBC Olympics, right, which featured really rich media, rich interactivity, and also videos that are streaming, right? And that's kind of the first wave of Silverlight, and I'm excited to show you where that wave of Silverlight has gone, so that now not only you're doing rich media, but you're also doing line of business applications. So we're gonna talk about that today. And you know, the question that I'm asking myself, and maybe you're asking yourself, is, hey, with all these trends coming, you know, will my applications be a part of this wave, and can I be a part of that, and how do I do it? So that's what we're gonna talk about today. You know, the next thing is, you know, some of you guys might be living dangerously as developers, right? You might be blazing the trails, blazing ahead, trying out these cutting-edge technologies, right? And that's really great. So a lot of us, you know, might have been doing the early Silverlight development, or might have been doing WPF development, right? So that you have the ultimate rich experience for your applications. And a lot of times we see crossroads when we're thinking about that. You know, in one direction, we could head off and really think about user experience. What's the best rich user experience that you could have? How can you maximize the hardware that you have? How can you even maximize the application platform, including Microsoft Office, things that are on your machine? But then there's the more pragmatic path, which is to think about, well, what are the needs of my business? And what requirements do my line of business applications need to have? You know, and historically, you really have to make that kind of architectural decision up front, right? Am I going to really focus on that user experience, or will I focus more on the practical needs of the business? You know, and then based on that, you'd probably make a technology choice and an application type choice and go from there. So that's been the situation up until now. And so the really cool thing is I'm going to show you how you can build these totally rich applications using technologies like Silverlight, and also using technologies like Windows C++. And you'll be able to get those benefits of the rich applications without having to give up on your business requirements. The second thing is we're going to look at, you know, all those features that I mentioned in Win 7 that are kind of exciting, like the task manager, the jump list. I'm going to show you how you could do that today in Visual Studio 10. And third, we're going to talk about how you can parallelize your application without having to be, you know, a computer science expert or a complete rock star programmer. You know, I mean, just like me, everyone can do some aspects of parallel computing to speed up your application and to have a lot more throughput. So we're going to talk about all those things in the next hour. So the first area that I want to talk about is how you can use Silverlight to build rich internet applications that are targeting the line of business, or basically your business applications, right? And we all know a lot of things about our business applications. The first thing is business applications start with your data. They probably end with your data too, right? But it's really all about the data. So the cool thing is, in this newest version of Visual Studio 2010 and also Silverlight 4, there's a number of new controls that make working with your data and binding to your data a lot better. So for example, there's grids, there's calendar controls, you know, there's the ability to do some reporting, and there's printing. So a lot of these features and scenarios that you have in business applications, you'll be able to do. You know, and we also talked about it starts with your data, right? And Silverlight, as you might know, is a sandboxed environment. So there's now new abilities to get your data from where it sits, let's say on an application server, on a database, possibly even in objects, and then using some RIA services that we have, you can get that data into your application in a trusted and a safe way. You know, the next thing is we have data binding. You know, and if you're like me, you might be fond of, you know, the Visual Basic experience where you can drag and drop, create controls easily, and do data binding. Well, the great thing is you get the ease of use that we've had in the past, but now with the modern best practices of the web and with a scalable approach to data binding. So that functionality is built in the box, and it really does scale in this release. So that's an exciting thing. We have integrated designers, right? So you have the ability to lay out your screens in a WYSIWYG visual experience that you're familiar with. And you can go back and forth between the designer and markup, so you have a lot of control as well as ease of use, right? And you could almost think of, like, you don't always have to hire a designer because some of the capabilities are actually in the product and you can actually get really far on your own. We'll also show today how you can use a product called Expression Blend to take the design and the transitions of your applications even further. And it's something, again, that we all can do, which is really cool. Right? Let's play a little game of myth busting, right? So the first thing is, you know, there's a perception that when you use Silverlight, you use a web technology, that you're stuck in the browser. Well, the cool thing is that's actually not the case anymore. You can have rich internet applications that are hosted in the browser, and now you can host that Silverlight application out of the browser. And that out-of-browser experience, as I'm going to show you, lets you take advantage of a lot deeper functionality inside of Windows. So for example, you'll be able to get to the file system. You'll be able to get to some common devices like cameras. You'll be able to work with the clipboard. And really importantly, you can do some COM automation, right, which lets you interact with other applications such as Microsoft Office, which is a key way to get data from your custom system into a very familiar format, right? The second thing, as I mentioned, you know, there's the perception that you can't store data locally, right? And that has been the case. You know, to have that security and sandboxing, we have to prevent everyday applications from going to local storage. Well, the really cool thing is in Silverlight 4 is the introduction of being able to use local storage. So really now you can get, you can enable users and your applications to do things like save to my documents, right? And the third thing is you have no access to local resources. And as I said, you know, with things like COM automation, with things like the clipboard, with things like your peripherals, there are much more things that you can do now with Silverlight. So it's, you know, basically you can take this bet on this reach platform and you have the ability to light up on these more interesting Windows technologies from your Silverlight app. Super cool. What I'm going to do is close PowerPoint, which hopefully you don't mind, and we're going to go actually build some of these Silverlight applications, and I'll show you how easy it is. So what I'm looking at here is Visual Studio 2010. This is the latest release. It's coming out literally by the time you see this. And what I want to do is get started in creating an application. So what we'll do is we'll create a new project. All right. And just as you're familiar with in Visual Studio products, you know, there's a number of different application types you can target. You know, here we're most interested in the Windows project types, which includes Windows Forms, WPF, and now Silverlight. But you can also do a number of other app types. Like your same skills can be applied to the web, to Office, even to SharePoint. Right, so we're going to focus on the Windows side of things. We're going to start from the Silverlight side of things. So Silverlight will find some initial applications in actually the web category. We're going to start web, and then we're going to go rich to Windows. So the first thing I'll do is let's pick a WCF service. Now, if you're not familiar with WCF, this gives you the ability to take your data and basically create an endpoint on the web so that your services and your data are accessible from other applications, whether that's rich Windows apps, Office apps, or web apps. Right, so the first thing I'll do is I'll create this WCF service application. We'll take the defaults, that's fine. I'll go ahead and, you know, Visual Studio is going to set up this entire web environment for me, you know, set up the protocols, the configuration. I'm not even going to have to worry about that. And, you know, like in any project, there's some default files that are added for me. Actually, I want to do this from scratch just to show you what happens, because that's still easy, and we'll see a few concepts along the way. So I'm actually going to delete this default service that it creates for me. All right. So we've seen the code go away. Now I'm going to go ahead and add a new project type. All right. And what I want to do in this entire scenario is I want to just show you how easy it is to take data from where it exists and get it inside of the Silverlight application. And once it's there, we can do some really interesting things. Right. So first, you know, we're talking about data, so let's go to the data category. And I want to create an ADO.NET entity data model. And all this means is I can use .NET to basically access the different kinds of data sources that I have. And we're going to create a representation of that data in something called a model, right? And you'll be able to work with this model to do basic, you know, creation, read, write, delete, all those data operations that we classically do. All right, so let's go ahead and create this entity data model. And the wizard is going to prompt me for, hey, where is this data coming from? So I'm going to generate this model from an existing database that I already have. You could use Northwind or your custom solution at this point. I'll show you mine. All right. We'll go next. And I need to choose a database connection. I have this database that represents a fictitious airline company called Blue Yonder. So that's where I'm going to connect. All right. You can see already that, you know, the latest version of Visual Studio, we follow best practices by default. So I'm going to save that connection string into a config file. And that can be edited and read, you know, after deployment. So, you know, we're listening to your feedback about best practices. We're building those in. I'm going to click Next. All right, now what I need to do is choose which parts of the database I'm most interested in. And that will get pulled into our model. And I don't really need to think about how that happens. I just need to pick what I want. So as you can see, you know, this database has a lot of tables, a lot of views. It even has stored procedures, which is another best practice. You know, for the sake of a demo, let's pick the tables. Let's pick the views. And I can see that all of my data is going to be created in this Blue Yonder Airlines model, right? So when I'm thinking about finding the data in IntelliSense and in code, I'm looking for this name. And if I need to change it, of course, I could pick a better name. I could pick Paul's data model if I wanted to. Click Finish. All right, now Visual Studio is going to my database. It's figuring out the complete shape of all those objects that I want, and it's going to generate that model for me. So we'll go ahead and do that. And what's going to happen in just a second is we're going to see a visual design experience for this entire model. And the cool thing is, you know, Visual Studio is actually a great example of a rich Windows app. So we have super rich designers. And as you're going to see in different places, we use modern technologies, including WPF, to give you this rich experience. And that lets us do things like we can, you know, zoom in and out of the schema. We can have this, I think you'd call the bird's eye view, and zoom around the schema. So just, you know, just keep in mind, things you're seeing in Visual Studio are the kinds of capabilities you're going to be able to build into your own application. All right, now that I've created the set of entities that I want to work with in my application, you know, and those entities are still internal to my application, the next thing I want to do is actually expose that data effectively to the web or to other network protocols. That will let my other applications have access to that data and be able to do common operations, read, write, delete, etc. So to do that, I'm going to use a feature called WCF Data Services, formerly known as ADO.NET Data Services. They're one and the same. And that will allow me to easily create this service-based application that's really focused on data, on these data entities. So to do that, I will add a new project item. And I'm going to scroll to web in this case. Sorry. I'll scroll down, and I see this WCF data service item. That's really what I want, just to expose my data. So I'll click Add. All right, and this is really simple to get started. You know, I can see that I have this WCF data service class, and the one thing it's asking me is, you know, it's a data service of what? Like, what kind of data type do I want to work with here? So as you saw earlier, we created that Blue Yonder data type. So let's just substitute this value. And I'm going to start typing in blue. That wasn't blue. Thank you. I rushed ahead in my typing, but you can see that the Visual Studio IntelliSense, once I typed in the right letters, actually zeroed me in to exactly the kind of entities I was looking for. So I'm going to pick that, hit tab. All right. And, you know, if I hit F5 right now, basically I would be exposing all of my entities, right? But I want to do a little bit more configuration. I want to figure out, you know, who should really have access to this, what kind of access do you want to have. So let's zoom in on the editor here. I'll hit Shift-Alt-Enter and go full screen. You know, and if I really wanted to show off, I could zoom in and out because, again, Visual Studio is based on WPF and takes advantage of this rich Windows. So what I'll do now is I'm going to uncomment this line of code. And you can see that, you know, you basically say, what are the entities that I want to expose and what kind of access? So in this case, let's not be too picky. Let's, you know, for the sake of the demo, we'll expose all the entities from within. And then there's a number of entity rights. If I use IntelliSense again, I can drop down and see that I can allow all read or all write or all read write or, you know, different kinds of CRUD access, basically. For the sake of the demo, let's do all read. Of course, you can configure the application to your requirements. All right, now I've configured the data service to have the right amount of access. So what I'll do now is I'm going to run and test out this data service. I've done a build, and I'm going to just view in browser. Now we're making a web request to the service, and it's going to respond back actually with well-structured XML. Of the schema, right? And you can see how, you know, this has a really nice benefit that you can see if your data service is working. It's also well-structured data, so there's a really nice protocol for every kind of application to understand what kind of data it's working with and then to really easily parse that data. Okay? Now, the next thing I want to do is, you know, that's basically just returning all of my data, and I can just do basic read, write, create, and delete. But you know, in the applications that we build, we tend to add more logic. We add business logic. We have queries. We validate things. So I want to show you how you would do that. So let's add another item to the project. So do add item. And in this case, I'll scroll up in the web list. And I want to add this domain service class. And this is a feature of WCF RIA services that allow me to expose my data and my business logic to Silverlight in a safe and trusted way, right? So I'm going to add this domain service, and we'll click Add. Okay. The next thing I'm prompted to do is, you know, of course, name the domain service. For a quick test, we don't need to do that. You can see that I have options for enabling client access. You know, this is basically for your various clients, Silverlight clients. I could also expose as OData, right? And that's an up-and-coming protocol that we've exposed. It's an open standard. We're seeing a lot of that. So you can also expose as OData, which is super cool. And the next thing I need to do is, you know, pick the entity, and let's pick, you know, the specific entities that we want to work with. In this case, I have an entity called Get Passenger Bookings Via Web. That's a clue to me that, you know, that's the query that I want to expose to the web. So we'll pick that. You know, I could enable editing if I wanted to. You know, we'll just make this read-only right now. It definitely works. And let's go ahead and hit OK. All right, and based on that input from that wizard, Visual Studio's created, you know, basically it's filled out the class that's ready to go and exposes the specific data methods that I want to work with, right? So I have this domain service class, and if I scroll down, I can basically see, let's zoom in again, I can basically see this function, right, called get visible passenger bookings via web, and it's returning, this is basically like an anonymous link query of my data types, and this is something that is easy to work with in code, and it's something that my Silverlight application is going to understand. And so let's zoom out of that again. And so, you know, basically we're ready to go. We're going to build that. And now that we've exposed the specific logic that we want to have, what I'd like to do is show you how to consume that data inside of a Silverlight client. So I'm going to go to my solution, and I'm going to add a Silverlight application. All right. And we're going to go ahead and just, you know, pick this standard Silverlight application. All right, a few things I need to do here. So it's asking me a few questions. Do I want to host this in a new project or just leverage the existing one? Well, just keep it simple and leverage the existing website. But the cool thing is you have options depending on how you want to partition your application. Which version of Silverlight do I want to use? Well, let's really use 4 because that has the cool in-browser and out-of-browser features for this talk. And then a super important thing, don't forget this, click Enable WCF RIA Services because this is going to allow us to kind of reach outside of the traditional sandbox and call trusted WCF RIA services. All right, so I'm going to click that, hit OK. And Visual Studio is going to create that Silverlight application for me with all the configuration that I need based on what I specified. Right? And what I can do now is I can open, you know, the main screen for my Silverlight app. Okay. Let's close a few things here. So the cool thing is, you know, Silverlight, just like WPF and just like WinForms, has this WYSIWYG designer so that you can visually see what you're designing and also kind of compare notes to the markup. And we keep the two in sync at all times, which is really neat. So what I'd like to do is, you know, remember there's data in my WCF service. So I'd like to go ahead and consume that. The really nice thing is Visual Studio knows that I was working with that data. I might need to do a little build. It will know. You can cut this pause out. Right, continuing, so Visual Studio knows the data that I already exposed in this project, that RIA service. And if I expand in the data sources window, you know, I'm already discovering that those rich data types that are embedded in that service. And, you know, just like other applications, I can actually drag and drop to my application, and I'm dragging and dropping from a data service onto a web application, which is really cool. So let's do that. And you can see that, you know, Visual Studio is going to set up all the bindings for me. It's going to create the controls. It's going to give you some good defaults, and we'll be ready to roll. Okay. Now, you know, I could embed the UI and kind of in paint the pixels exactly how I want. In this case, let's just basically doc fill. So I'm going to go down to the layout properties and we'll change a few defaults here. So let's make the width auto, which fills. We'll make the height auto and fill that. We'll kind of take autos also for the alignments. And We'll take autos for the margins. Okay, now I have that doc-filled data grid, right? And this is going to have all of the data that I have for a test. And, you know, I basically have what I need to go ahead and run the Silverlight application. So let's go and let's do a build. And then what we're going to do is check out this new Silverlight main page. Actually, I have a nice test page down here. You can see the Silverlight runtime's loading up. I'm fetching my web application. Awesome. And you can see, you know, basically with very minimal code, I have a completely rich way to manage all the data coming from my internal service, feed it to the web, and display it in a rich way to the user, right? And I have rich client-side controls at this point. So that's a super quick overview of how you can get started using your data inside of Silverlight for LOB development. I'm going to shift gears, and we're going to look at a more complete application. And I'm going to show you even more kind of compelling and advanced features that you can use inside of the tool. So we'll close this. And let's work with a different project now. And I want to work with this Blue Yonder Airlines. And just while it's loading, so Blue Yonder Airlines, again, this is a company that, you know, think of your favorite airline. And they wanted to have a rich application to do a number of things, from, you know, tracking flights to letting people search for flights and book them. You know, we'll talk about some features about saving those flights at a later time, and even managing some of the mileage plan benefits that your Platinum members would come to expect. And the really cool thing is, you know, this application straddles some of the reach things that you'd want in a consumer web application, as well as the really rich facilities that you would expect in a Windows application. We'll kind of show you how you can do both. All right, so now we've got our Blue Yonder solution loaded, and I'm going to give you a quick overview of what the parts of the application are, and then we're going to make some of those changes that make this application really light up on Windows. So the first part of the application is the mile tracker, and this is for the mileage member and also the Platinum member to do things, you know, common tasks associated with mileage management. We have other things like a few public-facing websites that the consumers can use, so you can do things like search for flights, book flights, pick your seats. And we have an administrative part of the app that the employees of Blue Yonder will use, and they can do things like, you know, rebook flights and much, you know, kind of more sophisticated operations that they have. I like this because it shows different parts of the business, and it shows how the different parts of the application all integrate with the same data. So let's focus in on the mile tracker application, right? And this is, you know, this is a Silverlight application. The UI is defined here in these view models. That's just a way of saying we have a representation of the screen, and that's going to bind to the data. You know, the actual data is defined in this data access layer. If we open that up, I can see that, you know, when I'm searching for flights or basically getting flights, I have this placeholder. And what I want to do is, you know, just using the same techniques that we saw before, I want to get data into this part of the application using RIA services. And in this case, I want to get a batch of data, which is an even fancier way of getting the data. So let's remove this FYI here, and we'll hit Control-K, Control-X, and we'll get into the code snippets. That would be question mark tab in VB. And we'll go to code snippets, and you can see, you know, there's code snippets that Microsoft provides. You can also provide your own. So these are extensibility points and snippets that I wrote. I'm going to pick this batch load, right? And I can see some code pop in here. Let's make sure you can see it. You know, and all we're doing is we're instantiating some entities, and then we're going to make some requests into our service. We're going to treat that as a batch execution, and then we're going to return it. Pretty simple, similar to what I showed you before. All right, so let's do a rebuild all. I just want to make sure that I get all components for my application built into the ZAP file, which is the packaging for Silverlight. And as soon as I do that, we're gonna load it up, and I'll give you a tour through what the application actually does. I think it's helpful to see it. And we are just about done. All right, now that I have this data defined, and the data will be loading into my application, let's go and test out the application. So if I look in the web project, this is where people can come into the application. I have a few test pages that make it easier for development. So let's try this mile tracker test application. Say view in browser. All right, and the Silverlight application loaded up right away, and I see a login screen. You know, and like every good business application, you have a login screen. You know you're in the right place. I could log in using the in-browser client, but actually what I want to do is something even cooler. So in Silverlight 4, if I right-click on the application, now I'm seeing this install application onto this computer, right? And so when we talk about the out-of-browser experience for Silverlight, this is it. So I can click that, and a dialog's coming up, and I can go ahead and install these components locally on my onto my machine. I'll have icons on the desktop and in the start menu. And just so you know this is kind of the default security experience, but if you sign your application, you don't need to see this dialog, and you get a little bit nicer experience for your users. So I'd recommend that. So we'll click install. Now we're bootstrapping that application locally, and it's going full screen, which is nice, but you know, I'm seeing the same thing, so I can log in now. All right, and I have a really rich experience here. I've got a representation of my data, past trips, future trips. This little toast just popped up, so that's a new feature that you can use and hopefully don't abuse. And we have a number of tasks here, so I could book flights, I could do some reporting on my miles, and I can do some printing. You can see I got a little overzealous with that toast, just to show it off. So I'll pick book flight. All right, and this is the part that we just worked on as far as loading flights into the system. So we're going to search for flights coming from LAX. I can see, you know, built in, the controls are kind of giving me that IntelliSense kind of a feel and narrowing down the list, which is cool. And we'll go to Sydney from LAX. Those of you who watch TV, this might remind you of a certain flight path. Okay, and let's pick a better date range. And we'll go economy, and hopefully I get lucky and my status will take me to possibly a better flight. We'll do a search. All right, and right now that code that we wrote to get those flights got invoked here. Let's pick the second flight, and we'll start, you know, getting seats and pricing it out. I can see that there's a seat picker, and this is one of my favorite parts of the application. So we're getting a really rich visualization of the whole airplane, kind of like what you see in some modern kiosks today, and I can pick the seats that work best. Get my next flight. I'm going to do the same thing. I like being on the aisles. Okay, pick those. And then it's almost off the screen, but I can say save selection. All right, I can see that my seats were pulled in, and then I can go ahead and confirm. Now, before I book, you know, and put in my payment information, I want to think about the next feature, which I'd like to add, which is all about being able to save this data offline. You know, sometimes you have a couple flight ideas that you want to work out, but you want to save it and then be able to come back. You know, and that's kind of like putting your web application in an offline mode. So I'm going to show you really quick how you can, you know, work with the local file system and do some offline things with your Silverlight application. All right, so let's close this out. We'll close this part of the application. All right. All right, so now that we've closed up the application, let's go and add this feature to save the flight information offline. So we're going to go back into the mile tracker application. And there's two things I want to work with. We're going to work with this booking view model, which we talked about earlier. And we're going to talk about the flight confirm view, which was that screen where I want to add basically a save button. So the first thing, let's go to this booking view model. And I need to add the feature that my screen can call to save. So if we scroll all the way down, there should be a placeholder for me to save my data, right? So I'm going to add another snippet. We'll scroll down, and I have this Silverlight save, so you don't have to see me type it in. But basically what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take the data that's in my view, I'm going to serialize that into XML, and we have an API call that just serializes the data into XML. And then the really cool thing is I can actually call the save file dialog just like a Windows desktop application can do, but it's actually my Silverlight app. And that's going to allow me to save to certain areas of the file system. In this case, we're going to default to My Documents because that is an allowed place where you can save. All right, so we've made that change. And let's also go into that view I was talking about. So we'll take the flight confirm view. We'll open that up. All right, and I can see that my designer, an actual person, not the designer in the tool I'm showing you, but there's a designer that I work with who knew I might want this feature, and they already created a placeholder for this button. It just wasn't turned on, right? So I'm going to go to the button's properties, and there's a visibility property, and we will just we'll toggle that to make the control visible. And one cool thing I'll show you here is, you know, I made the change in the designer, but I see right away the markup was edited too. So that's, you know, that's the Silverlight and WPF designer that's doing some cool things for me. And we'll do another build, and then we're going to test this out. All right. So go back to the web test harness, and we'll load it back up. All right. Now, given that I'm using, you know, the beta of Silverlight 4 here, we'll have to do one trick just to unload the application that's on my desktop, and then we're going to reload it. It's really easy. All right. So I can right-click and say remove the old version of the application. Then I could just come right back and right-click and say install the new version. It's going to bootstrap the new Zap file. Click install. All right, we'll log in again. Seeing my toast. And let's book a flight. We'll do the same parameters this time. So let's do the LAX. And let's go to Sydney, Australia. We'll pick a sensible date range. And we'll do a search. Okay, and I'm seeing a flight again that matches what I want to do. So we'll price the selection, and you remember this part. We're going to pick a seat. I like those aisle seats. Can't get one this time. We'll save the selection. We'll confirm. Okay, now the feature we just added, that book later, is showing up here because that we made that button visible. I'm going to click that. And the really cool part, so now my Silverlight application that's out of browser is giving me access to save to my file system. So this is literally my local My Documents. And let's just say my vacation to Sydney. We'll hit save. You know, and under the covers, we're just serializing some XML with a few lines of code. And we can load that back in very easily. All right, and that gives you just a quick overview of the first feature that you know, really kind of lights up on Windows. I want to do one more thing. I want to do something really whizzy, you know, because, again, like I said, the bar for visual design is really going up. And, you know, there's a few things that we can do to add some sizzle to our applications. So let's close this. And this time I'm going to use another tool that's a Microsoft tool called Expression Blend. And this is going to make it really easy for me to add that really nice design, high production quality to my application. So let's load that up. It's Microsoft Expression, and I have the right version here for the new version of Silverlight. Make sure I get the right one. Okay, so now what I can do is, so the Silverlight project I had in Visual Studio, I can load the same project inside of Blend. And the great thing is, if I use a source code control system, I can actually work on the project as a developer with my designer at the same time, because the designer works on the view model files, and I work on the logic files. And we can just check in and collaborate together. So what I'm seeing here is, I'm seeing the login screen, but what I'd actually like to do is have an effect so that when the user, when they log in, the window kind of gets really small, and then when they, you know, log out, it gets big again. So that's actually pretty easy to do, and it's well within, you know, all of our abilities to do with using Blend. So first thing I want to do, let's get a lay of the landscape. You know, I have designers, I have properties, I have some tool windows. You know, I can click on different artifacts and start to get, you know, some interesting properties. The thing that I really want to focus in on is this login grid, right? And I can see that it has some different elements like buttons and whatnot. So, you know, the goal is to really shrink the experience of this login down when an event happens. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go to, let's add some states. And if you're unfamiliar with this kind of user interaction design, you know, basically we can define a number of different states that the UI is in, and some different triggers and some different animations. You know, and quite simply in this case, I just want to have a state for what does the UI look like when it's open and what does the UI look like when it's closed. So let's go ahead and add some states. So I'll add a group, and just to keep it straight in my mind, I'm going to call this the login screen transition. All right, and I want to add some states to that group. So the first one, we'll just call it open. And I don't really need to make any changes because you can see that the designer is recording the state that it's in, and it's already in the right state. When it's open, it should be big. We're going to add another state called closed. And that's the one where we're going to shrink things down. Looks like I didn't click it. Okay. Now, closed is in the wrong state, so let's go to the property window for login grid, and we're going to go to this transform, and this is where I can go and really transform the way that the UI looks. We'll go over to, I want to look at basically the scale and transform with a different scale. So right now it's scaling at 100% or basically one time. Let's bring that down to 0.1 or 10%. Pick a nice even number. I could use the slider if I want to also. All right. And so you can see it gets this small. It's not totally invisible, but it's small enough that, you know, we know it's there. And you know, the last thing that I need to do is, now that I've got the right state, I want to create that event, or basically that trigger, that how am I going to know, you know, when I should go into this closed state? You know, and the user does that when they click that login button, right? So let's go back to the states, and I want to see the open state so I can actually see the UI. So we'll click on open. You can see that you can see kind of the difference I can preview between open and closed. And actually, that reminds me, why don't we make a nicer looking transition? So let's say in half a second, it should transition between open and closed. Let's see. And let's make sure this auto preview's on. There we go. So now open, closed, open. You can really waste a lot of time doing that. Having fun. All right, now let's go back to let's look at the assets. And what I want to do is create this behavior, basically create this event for when the person clicks login, we're going to go to the closed state. So I'm going to click on assets, then behaviors, and then I should find the kind of behavior that I'm looking for. So we have this go to state action. That's the one I want. And basically, I'm going to associate that action with the button. So I just kind of drag it right onto the button. And I'm getting some properties now. So I see go to state action has the selection. And there's some common things I can do with it. So it's working with this user control, this login control. And I want it simply when you click the button to go to closed. So I can see event is click. Here's the control. And then we're going to go to the closed state. And that's basically it. That's what we have to do to get that kind of shrinky effect. So let's just go ahead and save. Now again, this is saving back to the same project that I was working in before. And let's close Blend. We'll do another build here. Okay, let's do a build and load it up. In just a second, I'm going to do that trick again where we unload and then we reload the application. So we're going to remove. That takes the stale one. And we're going to install the new one. And again, this is just a workaround for now for our desktop applications. All right, so let's log in. And we saw that really nice effect. It's probably a little tricky to see on the camera, but we shrunk it down. So again, to summarize, you know, using Expression Blend or using the help of a designer that maybe you work with on a team or that you can hire, you can add those kind of visual effects and that cutting-edge kind of graphics to your Silverlight application without having to do a ton of work, right? It was just a few clicks, and we had some really, really compelling-looking UI. So that gives you a sense of the kinds of things that you can do visually. Now, there's one more feature that I want to do to take advantage of another part of the Windows platform, but it's a different kind of platform. It's the application platform. So, you know, on this machine, I also have Microsoft Office, and one common thing I like to do is use Excel as a, you know, a lightweight reporting and analysis tool, right? So what I'm going to do is when the user clicks Chart Miles, I want to you know, dump basically that data into Excel. And, you know, again, using the new Silverlight 4 features, I can use COM automation to create an instance of Excel to push some data into some name ranges, you know, just like we've done throughout the years through automation. And then, you know, I have that really compelling format to really play with the data and track my usage of the data. So let's close this, and we'll add that last feature. So in this case, I have a set of utilities, and we've wired up that reporting button to this utility. So let's open the file. And let's scroll down. And you can see that there's already a placeholder to do some of the work where we call into Excel using automation. And now this is allowed in my out-of-browser Silverlight app, right? So I can see, you know, I'm doing a classic get object, and that creates the Excel application. And now that I have that object, you know, in Excel, I'm ready to party on it. So let's go to this export to Excel function. You know, and really cool new version, new feature in C# 4 is this dynamic keyword, which lets me, you know, define an object at design time and then work with properties at runtime without defining them at design time. So it's, you know, if you're familiar with late binding or reflection, it makes it a lot easier to do some of these tricks where, you know, you're working with properties that only exist at runtime. And, you know, if you have a lot of experience with COM, you know, this makes working with COM so much easier in working with Office. All right, so let's poke in one last snippet here. And we have Silverlight to Excel using automation. And, you know, again, there's a little bit of code here, but this is just classic COM automation code where we're getting the cells of the spreadsheet or the name ranges that we want to work with, and we're just going to poke some values into it. And, you know, that's really straightforward. And then, you know, to finish it up, we're going to activate Excel so that the user can actually see the work that we did. So let's go ahead and build this, and we'll check out our last feature. All right. So we're going to load our test application. And we're going to do the trick again to refresh the application. All right, now that the application's loaded, we're going to right-click on it. We're going to remove the old out-of-browser application. And then we're going to add the new one. And we'll install it. Log in now. All right, and this time what I'm going to do is click on the Chart Miles button. And this is where it's going to call out into Comm Automation. You can see on the fly it's kind of automating Excel. It built up a sheet, and then it even created a report via chart for me, which is really cool. So I can now I have like that ultimate analysis and visualization of my data, and I can, you know, I can do my own user-defined things. Like I could, I can see where I'm at across the year, right? So I have just about 30,000 miles, and I'm really trying to get to 100. So that's my goal. So let's subtract this from 100, and I can see, wow, you know, I've got to do a lot more flights to Sydney because I need to get about 70,000 more miles. So you can see this very quickly gives me the ability to analyze where I'm at and make some kind of custom reports. And, you know, in your line of business applications, this will be hugely useful. All right, so now we're going to shift gears, and we're going to go back to the slide deck. All right, so I just showed you in Silverlight how you can easily, you know, create that rich experience, and then you can start to add features that give you full power to the desktop. Now let's talk about, you know, some more ways we can stand out. Well, you know, we don't want to stand out for the lack of features that we have, right? So, you know, with this new wave of, you know, Windows 7 features and with other applications that are taking advantage of the hardware, you know, it'd be really cool that if your application gets to play in that party. You know, so we're kind of saying stand out by design, not by default. So, you know, we can think of all those Windows 7 features that are pretty interesting, and also kind of getting that Office or Windows 7 look and feel. That's another thing that we might want to have so that, you know, our applications don't all look like the really old school 1990s. You know, we can modernize in increments. And, you know, when we're thinking about new code and when we're thinking about existing code, there's really some decisions that we think about, you know, in a lot of us have code that is actually native code, right? So we have C++, we might have some VB6, and we're intermixing parts of our applications with new, more modern applications, you know, like using WPF or now even using Silverlight. And the really great thing is you have platform options for both, right? You can do native development and you can do managed .NET development. And, you know, we've really invested in both directions quite a bit, and we've created a lot of interop inroads so that you can use both together and, you know, really take that gradual and incremental approach to innovating on your applications. And, you know, what I'm really showing here is there's that yin and yang, effectively, of your native with your managed. So, you know, for those of you who are familiar with Visual C++ and how it's evolved throughout the years, we've made a tremendous investment in C++ over the last version, and I think it's really going to help us build compelling applications on Windows using C++. You know, and also a lot of us are maintaining just really huge code bases, and so, you know, some really cool things about C++ is you're going to be able to work with those large applications, and the tool has been improved to really scale to work with those large code bases. You're going to see IntelliSense improvement, you're going to see navigation and search improvements. And also we've enhanced C++ so that you can take advantage of those more compelling you know, Windows 7 and Office-like features using MFC. So let's, rather than me talking too much about, I'm just going to go and show you. All right, so we're cutting over to now a C++ application, and you might be asking why C++? Well, you know, this airline company has a lot of legacy code that's really solid code. It's running the business. There's really no need to change it, and it's high performance. So for technical reasons, it was the right choice, you know, for the airline at the time. So just to give you a quick overview, you know, I can load different admin screens. So I'm basically kind of hosting browser windows, and I have other kind of admin tasks that I can do here, and I'm seeing that office ribbon, office-style ribbon. And I could go ahead and change from, you know, Office 2007, even on the fly, to a more Windows 7 kind of a feel. So let me show you really quick how you can achieve that, and we'll add a couple features. We'll go from there. All right, so the first thing I want to do is we'll switch over to Resource View. We'll break down into the ribbon. Right, and I can load this up. And so here's the definition of the ribbon file. Now when I double click it, really cool thing is I have a visual design surface for this ribbon. You know, and I can also choose what the default look and feel should be. So right now it's that Office 2007 black. You know, we could also go to the Windows 7 feel. Go to the toolbox. We'll just add a few things. So I'm going to add a category. And we can start to set up our UI, right? So the first thing I want to do is we want a place to process credit card information. And we can add a button. Where you actually do the processing. I can repeat for printing. So let's add another category. We can add some printing functionality. Same thing, I can add a button. And we'll print. All right, and then the last step is to actually implement kind of the code behind these buttons. So if I right-click, I can say add event handler. And we're going to define it, kind of Nextdoor admin app. Give us a better name, like process CC. Add an edit, which takes me to code. You know, I have a nice placeholder here to put in my code. So you don't have to see me type it. We'll use another code snippet, this time using the toolbox. Right, and you can just see that I'm defining the name of the window, and then I'm kind of popping up one of those new frames that has the credit card information, and it calls into actually my legacy credit card system, which is really cool. Another thing I'll do, let's implement this printing. So same steps, right-click, add an event handler. Add an edit. Had a little typo, but that should be fine. All right. And then we can F5. We can try this out. We'll just let it do a rebuild. All right, and now I'm seeing this ribbon UI. I can click the process button. That's going to load up my legacy credit card processing system. And, you know, this guy is going to look really, it's going to look kind of back-end-like. Here we go. It's loading that console system. So I'm integrating the existing with the new. All right, and you can also do the printing functionality. Let's go ahead and close. And I want to show you one more thing that's important to C++. Right. So with really large code bases, one thing we find ourselves doing is searching for the members. And really cool thing is if you hit Control Comma, which is what I just did, you can load up this new Navigate To window, and then I can search for APIs, and very quickly it's going to narrow down. So I can look at all my init methods, right? And I can see that I have an init instance declaration in the header, and that's why I have this little arrow next to it, and I have the actual implementation. I can click on that. It'll automatically navigate me to that init instance that I was looking for. And now I can add one more feature. You know, I've talked a lot about this Win7 integration. So I can get jump list functionality right inside of MFC with just a little bit of straightforward code, right? So I'm going to add this code. I'll just show you what it looks like. So those command declarations that we defined before, you know, I can basically map my jump list to those commands. And let's run this. Right, and now when I'm right-clicking down here in the task well, I can see this list of tasks that I just added. So as you can see, you can add in your native code all these capabilities to kind of do the Windows 7 thing. And also, if you're a managed developer, we do have toolkits online on CodePlex that give you the libraries to also do jump lists and interesting Win7 features in your managed application. So definitely go check that out. All right, last but not least. All right, so many of us know about Moore's Law. And thinking about that, what that says is, you know, about every 2 years or every 24 months, the number of transistors in a chip will approximately double. So in other words, you know, your hardware horsepower is doubling every 2 years. And, you know, that's been a true statement, but the way that we're applying Moore's Law is a little bit different maybe than we had thought, right? And not only are we seeing kind of the chips get bigger and faster, but we're seeing the number of CPUs and the number of cores increasing to kind of fulfill Moore's Law, right? So here's a picture of a common, you know, powerhouse computer today where you can see in Task Manager just every core, every CPU that's being listed. You know, and we're achieving that additional horsepower and that additional throughput through parallel development, through concurrent development. Now, you know, when we think about parallel programming, it can be a daunting practice, right? In over the years, you know, we've reserved that really for our most senior architects and, you know, developers who really specialize in this area of computer science. Now, the cool thing is, in Visual Studio 2010 and the .NET framework, we've added some really accessible APIs that make doing some common parallel tasks a lot safer and a lot more accessible to you, right? So what I want to show you is that last piece of, you know, some ways that you can take advantage of your actual parallel computing hardware in your dual core plus hardware. All right, so I've cut over now to the admin part of the application that does flight management. And in addition to this flight manager library and the flight manager UI being open, I have the Windows Task Manager open. And you can see I have actually two cores, so this is a dual core machine. You need at least two to kind of see this functionality at work. And if I look at the code in this case, you know, basically this is the part of the code that's responsible for figuring out what happens when your flight gets canceled and, you know, searching through a number of flights that might be applicable, figuring out your priority based on your membership, and doing some serious number crunching to find you that next flight. Right, and as we scroll down in the code, we see there's a few kind of pieces of heavy lifting that happen. So basically, we do one of these link queries, and we're going to find basically the combination of what are your scores for a flight and what are the available flights. We'll order them, and based on that, we're going to present you with a list of flights that apply. Right. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to run this code without any parallel computing being taken advantage of. So as you can see, my little pound define is turned off. We'll make sure that this is the startup project. And we'll run it. All right, so what I'm looking at here is a list of those flights, and again, I'm kind of the clerk behind the desk trying to find my customer the new flight. So we can see that if this flight gets canceled, I have a screen that comes up, and let's go try to find that next flight. And when I hit the start button, it'll do that. Let's keep Task Manager open, and we'll go ahead and start. And we'll see some, you know, pretty interesting CPU activity going on here between the cores. I'm probably not fully utilizing the CPUs, and you know, the tasks tend to be pretty serialized. You know, it's doing one query, doing another query, analyzing those queries and managing them back together. And I'm seeing that status right here. Right, and when that's done, I should get a little report of how long it took. Wow, that took, you know, about, you know, I'm seeing 6 here as the benchmark for how well my application performed. Now let's see if we can do better, right? So we're going to come back in, and we're just going to turn off this flag, and all that's going to do is in this line of code, in the parallel branch, in my link query, I see now there's this keyword as parallel, right? And so that just tells the system to use parallel computing to help kind of, you know, as appropriate, fetch the data in parallel. And, you know, it tends to be a pretty safe operation here because I don't have any assumptions about, you know, my variables being in a very specific state at a certain point of time. So I feel good about using it here. Also, you know, there are other parts of the code where I can have a parallel for each. So you can see there's language keywords even in libraries that help me use parallel computing. So that said, let's just run it one more time and see if we see a bit of an improvement. All right, so we'll cancel the flight. Let's get the task manager up. We'll start. Now what you're seeing is we're really maxing out you know, the full ability of the CPU at this point, because it's crunching a lot more at the same time. And we should see, you know, a bit of an improvement in this case. All right, and we brought it from 6 all the way down to the high 3s. So, you know, it's not a silver bullet in speeding up every part of your application, but if you use it wisely, it can really help you with your computationally intensive parts of your application. You know, and the last thing for a pro developer that you should know about, we have some tools inside of Visual Studio Pro, so if you have a breakpoint, it's a little hard to see right now. Let's try to hit a breakpoint real quick. I hit the wrong one. Let's do it the right way. So we'll stop debugging. There we go. All right. Now we're in the right spot. So two new windows you need to know about that are in the debug menu. So if you go to debug, windows, we have parallel tasks and parallel stacks. And these are super handy because, as you might know, when you're doing parallel development, you have multiple threads, you have multiple cores, and it makes it really unwieldy when you're doing debugging and looking at the stacks to know which stack frame you're in given a specific part in time. So the great thing is with parallel tasks, you can very clearly see, you know, what's the ID of the task that you're in or of the thread that you're in, and you get some additional information. Also, we have this parallel stacks window, which gives you a visualization. Let's look at a simpler view. This basically gives you a visualization of the threads that have been spawned up. And I can see there's this master thread, there's kind of a UI thread, and then there's this background worker thread that I'm in. And this makes it just so much easier to visualize, you know, programmatically what's going on, what states am I in, and, you know, I can hover over literally to see which thread ID I'm in and what's going on. So with these tools in Visual Studio 2010 Professional, you're going to be able to do some parallel development and be able to take advantage of these things. Also, if you have Visual Studio Premium, we have this concurrency visualizer, which gives you, you know, even a much better visualization and representation of the throughput of your machine. You know, it's kind of like much better than what we're seeing here in the task manager. All right, to summarize, so what you saw today is, you know, using Visual Studio 2010, we were able to create business-centric applications using Silverlight 4, and we were able to build these really rich-looking applications that were hosted in the browser for Reach and also could be hosted out of the browser, so you can really take advantage of those desktop and platform features, right? We also saw some ways that we can light up, so to speak, on Windows 7 and make your application look really cool and behave in a really cool way like other applications in Windows 7. And I showed you how you can start to take advantage of your parallel computing that you have in your hardware today, right? And we showed a few places that are safer, that you know you can go ahead and query data and you can do loops and you can take advantage of that hardware. So with that said, thank you very much for your time. And I look forward to you know, to seeing you out there. And you guys should definitely check out the training kits and all of the content that we have on MSDN, because that'll really give you a jump start into working with the stuff. Thank you.